Reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports on a deal between WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and the U.S. government.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange will plead guilty to a felony charge in a deal with the U.S. Justice Department that will resolve a long-running legal saga over the publication of a trove of classified documents. Assange is scheduled to appear in the U.S. federal court in the Mariana Islands, a U.S. commonwealth in the Western Pacific, to plead guilty to an Espionage Act charge. Prosecutors have agreed to a sentence of the 5 years Assange has already spent in a high-security British prison while fighting to avoid extradition to the U.S. to face charges. I'm Haya Panjwani.
The European Union opened formal accession talks with Ukraine on Tuesday after Kyiv's decades-long effort to join the organization, Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen.
The launch of talks, though largely ceremonial, is an important step for a nation that has spilled blood and pushed through the reforms required in its pursuit of EU membership. Ukraine filed its request to join the EU days after Russia's full-scale invasion in February 2022. It sees membership as validation of its fight to embrace European values. Ukraine cleared initial hurdles to accession in December by showing progress in fighting corruption and rebuilding its judiciary, among other areas the EU considers fundamental. The negotiations with the EU are expected to take years to conclude.
South Korea says it will consider sending arms to Ukraine after Russia and North Korea rattled the region and beyond by signing a pact to come to each other's defense in the event of a war. The comment from a senior presidential official came Thursday, hours after North Korea's state media released the details of that agreement. Observers say it could mark the strongest connection between Moscow and Pyongyang since the end of the Cold War. This is VOA News. Germany says it's extremely concerned about rising violence on Israel's border with Lebanon and the growing risk of a full-blown regional conflict. It's according to Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock on the visit to the region on Monday.
Together with our partners, we are working hard on finding solutions that can prevent more suffering. The risk of an unintended escalation and of all-out war is growing by the day.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu signaled on Sunday Israel could move more troops to the north, where fighting against the Iranian-backed Hezbollah militia has escalated on the border with Lebanon. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu insists he will only accept a partial ceasefire deal that would not end the 8-month-long war in Gaza, casting doubt on the viability of a U.S.-backed truce proposal. Netanyahu said he was ready to make a partial deal to bring back some of the 120 hostages still held by Hamas in the Gaza Strip, but said that they're committed to continuing the war after a pause in order to complete the goal of eliminating Hamas. The espionage trial of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich is set to begin in Russia this week. Reuters correspondent Trevor Coral with more.
Gershkovich is the first American journalist to be detained on spy charges in Russia since the Cold War, and could face up to 20 years in prison if convicted. The FSB said it caught him, quote, red-handed, trying to obtain military secrets. Russian prosecutors say Gershkovich carried out the illegal actions using, quote, painstaking conspiratorial methods. They did not release any documentary evidence to back up the charge. The Wall Street Journal says Gershkovich was on a reporting assignment and has said the accusations are based on lies. It denies he is a spy and demands his release. The trial will take place behind closed doors.
Millions of Americans sweated through yet another scorching day while floodwaters force evacuations in parts of the Midwest, including a town in Iowa whose own water level gauge was submerged. One person was killed during flooding in South Dakota, according to the governor. From the Mid-Atlantic to Maine, across the Great Lakes region, and throughout the West to California, public officials cautioned residents about the dangers of excessive heat and humidity. In Oklahoma, the heat index, what the temperature feels like to the human body, was expected to reach 107 degrees. The National Weather Service warned of the potential for rare tornadoes in the Northeast. You'll find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's government calls on anti-tax protesters not to abuse their constitutional right to petition the government.
They must remain peaceful and unarmed throughout the assembly, the demonstration, the picketing, and the presentation of any petitions to authorities.
Malawi begins an investigation into the vice president's plane crash. Zambia calls on the African Union and SADC to mediate talks with neighboring Zimbabwe. Amnesty International calls for the immediate release of a factional Zimbabwe opposition leader. 58 parliamentarians from South Africa's Umkhonto we Sizwe party are scheduled to be sworn in today, Tuesday.
It is appropriate that every member that has been elected undertakes their seat so that they can be part and parcel of the constitutional functioning of the institution.
And the Sudanese city of El Fasher is under threat from paramilitary RSF fighters. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's full parliament is expected to vote today, Tuesday, on the passage of the country's controversial Finance Bill 2024, but so too are protesters who have been demonstrating under the Reject Finance Bill 2024 banner. They plan to occupy parliament today to force lawmakers to reject the proposal, which imposes taxes on bread, motor vehicles, and other items. Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Kithure Kindiki late Monday called on protesters not to abuse their constitutional right to petition their government.
According to Article 24, 1D of the Constitution, this right, as all other rights, is limited by, among other things, the need to ensure that the enjoyment of this right does not prejudice the rights and freedoms of others. It follows, therefore, that those exercising the Article 37 rights must do so under the following constitutional and legal parameters. One, they must remain peaceful and unarmed throughout the assembly, the demonstration, the picketing, and the presentation of any petitions to authorities. Two, they must engage in a manner that does not promote violence or riots, because the right in Article 37 is the right to demonstrate. It is not the right to riot. Number three, they must not breach public order. Number four, they must not intimidate, harass, or otherwise inconvenience members of the public who are not protesting. Number four, they must inform the police of their intentions to exercise this right. They must also inform the police of the routes they will take for purposes of providing escorts and ensuring that there is law and order during this constitutional expression. They must also notify the police the timings of their activities. They must stop their activities at sunset or at 6:30 p.m., whichever is earlier, in accordance with the Public Order Act, Cap 57 of the Laws of Kenya. They must not provoke, attack, injure, or obstruct law enforcement officers or even members of the public.
That was Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Kithure Kindiki addressing the media Monday evening. The audio is courtesy of NTV Digital. President Joe Biden has officially designated Kenya as a major non-NATO ally of the United States for the purpose of Arms Export Control Act. In a memorandum issued Monday, the president said, quote, by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including Section 5.7 of the Foreign Assistance Act of 1961, as a mandate, I hereby designate Kenya as a major non-NATO ally of the United States. During Kenyan President William Ruto's visit to the United States last month, President Biden pledged to designate Kenya as a major non-NATO ally. Kenya becomes the first country in sub-Saharan Africa to hold the designation. The U.S. State Department on Monday said the first contingent of an international force assigned to a mission to tackle rampant gang violence in Haiti will arrive in Port-au-Prince this week. Here is State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller.
On Friday, the Kenyan government announced the first MSS mission personnel contingent will arrive in Port-au-Prince during the week of June 24. They will depart Kenya tomorrow, June 25th. This is just the first of several milestones in the process to restore security and prosperity in Haiti. The arrival of the MSS mission marks the start of a first-of-its-kind mission. Requested by Haiti and authorized by the UN Security Council, this is a truly international undertaking. With the arrival of MSS mission personnel, we hope to see further measurable improvements in security, particularly with respect to access to humanitarian aid and core economic activity. This will help create the security conditions conducive for future free and fair elections. We applaud the Transitional Presidential Council's partnership with Kenya on this mission. We stand with the international community in supporting this historic effort to support the Haitian National Police in their fight for Haiti's future.
That is State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller speaking Monday at the State Department. In South Africa, 58 selected parliamentarians from the opposition Umkhonto we Sizwe or MK party are scheduled to be sworn in on today, Tuesday. The party had vowed to boycott the legislature at the first sitting of parliamentarians in the National Assembly on June 14. Maloto Mutapo, the spokesperson for South African Parliament, says the installation of the MK lawmakers will be presided over by the Chief Justice and the Speaker of Parliament.
You will recall that the 58 members of the MK party were not available during the first sitting of the National Assembly on the 14th of June for whatever reasons. And we did indicate as Parliament that once they become available, we will ensure that all necessary logistical arrangements are made to ensure that they come to Cape Town to be sworn in as duly elected members of the National Assembly. So they have indicated to us in the last few days that now they are now available, and we have arranged with the Chief Justice of the Republic of South Africa, because if it is the first swearing in to fill the vacancies in the National Assembly, that must be conducted by the Chief Justice. And the Speaker of the National Assembly will deal with those members that would have been a replacement to the original list that we received from the IEC. So all that will happen on Tuesday at a ceremony that will be presided by both the Chief Justice and the Speaker of the National Assembly.
I understand the Constitution mandates that before members of the National Assembly begin to perform their functions in Parliament, they must be sworn in to affirm their faithfulness to the Republic and obedience to the South African Constitution. But some people are of the opinion that since they decided to boycott it, then why should they be accorded the same opportunity? Because they argue it's a delay in parliamentary activity. Your thoughts?
No, I wouldn't call it a delay in the parliamentary activity, because Parliament is fully constituted to conduct its constitutional functions, and it does not require. So I wouldn't say that there was a delay that has been caused by the 58 members of the MK party not being sworn in on the first sitting. However, these are the designated seats that following the elections, the IEC has designated to the MK, and they belong to the MK party. So as and when they are able to take up those seats, ours is to ensure that all necessary arrangements are made to ensure that they are sworn in.
To ensure that all designated seats in Parliament are filled, and that parties are fully represented, what are they required to do to meet this threshold?
All that they need to do is to undertake the seats that they were designated by the Electoral Commission.
Maloto Motabo is the spokesperson for the South African Parliament. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 25th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Malawi has started investigations into the cause of a plane crash that killed Vice President Saulos Chilima and 8 others on June 10 in northern Malawi. The investigation by a team of German experts comes after Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera said last week that he had asked foreign governments to help probe its cause, despite the investigation launched by the Malawi military.
Malawi government spokesperson Moses Kunkuyu said Sunday the experts will look into several areas leading to the crash of the Dornier 228 aircraft, including the condition of the plane and circumstances. The military plane was carrying Vice President Saulos Chilima and 8 others to the funeral of a former cabinet minister in northern Malawi, crashed on June 10. The plane went missing the previous day, soon after it was advised not to land at an airport in northern Malawi because of bad weather. The arrival of the German experts comes after Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera said last week that he was puzzled with what caused the crash of the plane he has long used. Chakwera said he had asked foreign governments to help probe the accident, despite investigation being carried out by the Malawian Defense Force. Michael Kayatsa is the executive director for the Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation, one of several organizations in Malawi that asked for the independent investigation into the crash. He welcomes the start of the investigations.
However, it's important that the government, you know, should not interfere in any way in the investigation. This should be, you know, totally independent investigation, so that whatever comes out of it should be credible.
The sudden death of Chilima bred a lot of conspiracy theories in Malawi and abroad, with some suggesting it was an assassination plot. Last week, police in Malawi arrested lawmaker Kamlepo Kaluwa and rights activist Bonnie Kalindo for circulating messages on social media alleging the plane crash was planned. The two were charged with cyber crimes and were expected to appear in court today, Monday. But Kayatsa said arresting those expressing their views on the plane crash would prevent some people from giving information to investigators.
That's why we have issued a statement that strongly condemning the arrest. Because what this arrest will do is to get an atmosphere of fear at a time when we need, you know, to open up and freely come out to provide information of what they know about the accident.
Malawian security expert Sherif Kaisi said transparency is needed in such investigations to win the confidence of Malawians regarding the investigators.
We need to know them, that if they are from Germany, which company are they from Germany, and what are the track record that they have been doing the same similar job, for example, investigating such accidents, for how long they have done that, and what are the reports that they have.
Kunkuyu said two of the investigators are from the German Federal Bureau of Aircraft Accidents Investigation, while one is from General Atomics, a company that has taken over from the manufacturer of Dornier 228 aircraft. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Zambia says it has called on two regional bodies, the African Union and the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to mediate talks with neighboring Zimbabwe after its president Emmerson Mnangagwa appealed to Russia's Vladimir Putin for protection from what he described as militarily menacing, a description that Zambian officials reject. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zambian officials say the diplomatic fallout with the neighboring Zimbabwe stems from remarks that Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa shared with the Russian President Vladimir Putin on a recent visit to Russia, namely the accusation that the U.S. has been militarizing Zambia to consolidate power in the region and isolate Zimbabwe. In a televised speech in Parliament Thursday, Zambia Foreign Minister Mulambo Ayimbe rejected Mnangagwa's statement as an unwarranted attack on Zambia's sovereignty. He also said Lusaka, which has historically strong ties with its neighbor, wants to maintain cordial relations with it, the U.S. and Russia.
For example, in March this year, Zambia was one of the first countries that called upon the United States of America and the European Union to remove sanctions against Zimbabwe when the United States imposed new sanctions. Regrettably, however, Madam Speaker, the sentiments expressed by His Excellency President Mnangagwa do not appear to accord with the warm relations highlighted above.
Both the Southern African Development Community and African Union, to which both Zimbabwe and Zambia are members, could not be reached for comment Friday. Jennifer Muskwere, Zimbabwe's information minister, played down any deteriorating relations between Lusaka and Harare when reached for comment Friday by VOA.
We are a friend to all and an enemy to none. Zambia is our neighbor in the geographical reality with a long history from the federal days all the way to the contributions that we worked together during the liberation struggle. And at the same time that we are Siamese twins, I might not be aware of some of the questions that he refers to, but we are a friend to all and an enemy to none.
Dr. Alexander Rusero, an international relations professor at Africa University in Zimbabwe, says Zambia is simply retaliating and expressing displeasure to President Mnangagwa's comments.
But there is absolutely nothing with regards to being wrong diplomatically what President Mnangagwa did. Zimbabwe has every reason to worry against the realities of Zambia that is being militarized. And every neighbor should be worried when such developments happen. And remember, Zimbabwe and the United States of America relations, they are somehow still very frosty. So whenever there are developments next door, Zimbabwe has to be worried. But with regards to the utterances that President Mnangagwa made, it's the public leak, which may be erroneous, but not necessarily the utterances themselves, because it was a head of state expressing security concerns with regards to a neighbor being militarized by Zimbabwe's adversary, so to speak.
Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema has denied that his country is being militarized by the U.S. He says Zambia's army has exchange programs with a number of countries, including the U.S., and that should not be mistaken for U.S. setting up a base in Zambia. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Amnesty International has called for the immediate release of the factional leader of Zimbabwe's opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, Jameson Tamba, and dozens of his supporters were arrested last week over an alleged unsanctioned meeting. Amnesty Deputy Regional Director Kanyo Farisi says the group is also demanding a probe into reports that the detainees were tortured while in custody. The government denies the charge. Human rights attorney Kennedy Masiya told VOA's Chinedu Ofor that opposition activists in Zimbabwe are under siege.
Opposition politics in Zimbabwe is on the rocks. What we have seen manifesting itself right now is the effects of the closed spaces that have been happening in Zimbabwe. The democratic spaces have been closed, and right now we are seeing the continued persecution of opposition leaders, activists, or even ordinary people who try to speak out against the current ruling government. So I can say those you see being arrested, those who see being persecuted, are still fighting the fight. And I believe there's still some semblance of hope if people come out and occupy the spaces that they have to occupy.
Amnesty International is alleging torture in custody by the police, which the government has denied. From your experience, is it possible that these actions are taking place?
Yeah, it is possible. I've been a victim myself of police brutality, torture. I've represented clients who have been tortured in custody, several clients. As I speak right now, I'm speaking in the United States. When I left Zimbabwe, I had a client who went missing, Itai Zamara, and is still missing right now. And the government has not even tried to find out what happened to him. So any reports of torture that you hear now, to me, I take them as happening because the government itself, the police, the military, have got a track record of torturing people in custody.
Tomorrow, being Tuesday, the opposition leader and his supporters are due in court. What are your expectations?
The outcry, it does help trying to amplify what's happening in Zimbabwe, but this current government does not listen to anyone. We saw with Job Scala. Job Scala was incarcerated for almost 2 years in imprisoned without trial, and there were outcries from all over regional, international bodies, but nothing really happened. I wouldn't put my hopes high with the activists that going into court tomorrow that they might be granted bail, because we've seen cases where you would think as a lawyer, this is an obvious case where someone should be granted bail and not being granted bail. The courts have been politicized and there's little hope in the system, especially the judicial system, which some say has been captured by the current government in bringing up, you know, fair rulings or fair judgments.
Kennedy Masiya is a human rights attorney. He spoke with VOA's Chinedu Ofor from Dallas, Texas. An analysis of satellite imagery and video from the Sudanese city of El Fasher in Darfur last month show entire villages being burned repeatedly, reportedly by the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Nathaniel Raymond is the executive director of the Humanitarian Research Lab at the Yale School of Public Health. Raymond, who has analyzed satellite imagery over Darfur, tells viewers Carol Van Dam that in recent weeks, the fighting has subsided, but it is likely due to rain.
The UN Security Council passed UNSC Resolution 2736 the Thursday before last. We have not seen any signs of new major damage inside the city, nor have we seen significant thermal activity consistent with arson attacks in the area surrounding Al Fasher. There appears to be calm, but we also have credible reports that both sides are rapidly rearming and awaiting reinforcements. Rather than seeing this as a temporary ceasefire by accident, it is likely the result of rain. It has started raining in El Fasher, which has probably impeded RSF's ability to move.
Oh, that's interesting. You mentioned at the top of your remarks that this UN Security Council action. Can you elaborate a little?
The United Nations Security Council took action almost 2 weeks ago to call for the Rapid Support Forces to stop its siege of El Fasher. Since that time, the heavy fighting that had been happening since May 10th appears to have subsided. The resolution calls for humanitarian access to be provided by all parties, in particular Sudan Armed Forces.
Can you even tell that if now, you know, if there are corridors now for humanitarian, and can you tell from your imagery if that's working?
There's no sign of humanitarian corridors, both in terms of imagery, but also in terms of what's known through open source information. People have fled to the west, to Tawila, and to the south towards Zamzam IDP camp. And we see evidence that people have fled, and we see evidence of new internally displaced persons settlements, both to the south and inside Tawila. But there's no humanitarian operation to supply those people who have fled El Fasher.
Nathaniel Raymond is the executive director of the Humanitarian Research Lab at the Yale School of Public Health. He was speaking with viewers Carol Van Dam. And that's it for this Tuesday, June 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Mbote in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.